It's Monday, January 12th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers. Welcome to the podcast. Wow, it's been quite a crazy day here at Normal West Coast Media Headquarters in Portland, Oregon. I, first of all, had a blood apheresis appointment today. I'm a frequent blood donor at the Red Cross. I figure it's a really easy way to help people. You just got to sit there and bleed, actually. But this was an apheresis treatment, which is different. This is where they take the blood and they separate it into its constituent parts, the red blood cells and the platelets and so on. Turns out that with my blood type and my extremely high hemoglobin count and platelet count, that I'm an exceptional donor, and so they call me quite often. Anyway, this is a treatment that takes about 2 hours, and a funny thing happened. I was sitting there wearing my hemp cap with the pot leaf right on the front of it, and she told me that my platelet count was so high that I was going to be able to give 3 units of platelets. And so she was saying, yeah, we hardly ever get anyone here whose platelet count is higher than 400. I turned and asked, so what was my platelet count? And I kid you not, Stashers, it was 420. Yes, I'm a pothead even in my blood. Well, that's probably obvious. All right, let's get to the stash today. Today on the stash, I've got a special 2-part interview with Norm Stamper, the former Seattle chief of police who's quite a high-profile activist in the world of law enforcement against prohibition, that group of former and current law enforcement officers who've come to understand that the war on drugs is a futile waste of their time and a danger to the public. Norm's also a member of the Normal Advisory Board. I brought him in to talk about Barack Obama's response or non-response to the most popular questions on change.gov, as well as a few other questions I had for someone who would know a lot about law enforcement at the street cop level. So enjoy that 2-part interview here on today's Daily Audio Stash. Speaking of the change.gov question, I've got a special presentation of Barack Obama's second responses to round 2 here at the change.gov website. And I want to remind you that change.org is still open until this Thursday. And they didn't program their widget very well because their votes went over 5 digits and their widget only holds 4. So if you got on there thinking, wait a minute, last time I looked, there was 8,000 and now there's only 1,200. Well, that's really 12,000. So go ahead and log on and click on and vote for that number one question at change.org. That's going to be presented this Friday at the National Press Club. So again, the issue will get more treatment in the mainstream media. Also, don't forget that coming up this Thursday is also our deadline in the Normal $10,000 Pro Cannabis Ad Campaign Contest, where you can send in your video that answers the question, what should President Obama do about pot? You can turn those videos into media at normal.org. This Thursday is the deadline. You could win your share of $10,000 in cash prizes, including a $3,500 first prize. And your video will appear on the Normal website as well as some cable television exposure. So get those videos in as soon as you can. Well, it's been a pretty hectic day, but we just got the stash in under the wire. I hope you enjoy it. Here you go. It's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. In last week of Bush administration, DEA rejects petition for scientific study of medical marijuana. Washington, D.C. The Bush administration struck a parting shot to legitimate science today as the Drug Enforcement Administration, or DEA, refused to end the unique government monopoly over the supply of marijuana available for Food and Drug Administration, or FDA-approved research. DEA's final ruling rejected the formal recommendation of DEA Administrative Law Judge Mary Ellen Bittner, issued nearly 2 years ago following extensive legal hearings. The DEA ruling constitutes a formal rejection of University of Massachusetts at Amherst professor Lyle Craker's petition, filed initially June 24, 2001, to cultivate research-grade marijuana for use by scientists in FDA-approved studies aimed at developing the drug as a legal prescription medication. Professor Craker's petition was rejected despite the opinion of DEA's Administrative Law Judge Bittner that granting Craker a license to grow marijuana, quote, would be in the public interest, end quote. Judge Bittner issued a comprehensive 88-page non-binding recommendation to DEA Deputy Administrator Michelle Leonhardt on February 12, 2007, following 9 days of hearings, testimony, and evidence presented by the ACLU and others on both sides of the issue. DEA failed to take action on Judge Bittner's recommendation until now, continuing the strategy of delay and a pattern of unresponsiveness that has characterized the process since Professor Craker first filed his initial petition 7.5 years ago. Judge Bittner's recommendation was based largely on the fact that marijuana is the only Schedule I drug that the DEA prohibits from being produced by private laboratories for scientific research, which has resulted in a unique government monopoly that fundamentally obstructs appropriate research and regulatory channels. Other controlled substances, including LSD, MDMA or ecstasy, heroin, and cocaine, are available to researchers from DEA-licensed private laboratories. In contrast, the National Institutes on Drug Abuse remains the scientists' sole source of marijuana, despite the agency's repeated refusal to make marijuana available for privately funded FDA-approved studies that seek to develop smoked or vaporized marijuana into a legal prescription medicine. 45 members of the U.S. House of Representatives and Massachusetts Senators John Kerry and Edward Kennedy and a broad range of scientific, medical, and public health organizations have written in support of Professor Craker, including the Lymphoma Foundation of America, the National Association for Public Health Policy, the Multiple Sclerosis Foundation, as well as several state medical and nurses associations. Despite contradictory federal policy, 13 states have enacted legislation protecting patients who use medical marijuana with a physician's recommendation from prosecution under state law, and national polls consistently find that 75% of Americans support the use of medical marijuana. Here's the shorter version. We'd like to use marijuana as a medicine.
Marijuana is a dangerous drug. You cannot use it.
But our experiences show it's a medicine.
For something to be a medicine, it has to be scientifically studied and proven.
Okay, then we'd like to scientifically study marijuana.
No, you can't have any to study.
Why not?
Because marijuana is a dangerous drug. You cannot use it.
States ponder early release for prisoners. From MSNBC. Their budgets in crisis, governors, legislators, and prison officials across the nation are making or considering policy changes that will likely remove tens of thousands of offenders from prisons and parole supervision. In California, faced with a projected $42 billion deficit and prison overcrowding that has triggered a federal lawsuit, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger wants to eliminate parole for all offenders not convicted of violent or sex-related crimes, reducing the parole population by about 70,000. He also wants to divert more petty criminals to county jails and grant early release to more inmates, steps that could trim the prison population by 15,000 over the next 18 months. In Kentucky, where the inmate population has been soaring, even some murderers and other violent offenders are benefiting from a temporary cost-saving program that has granted early release to nearly 2,000 inmates. Virginia Governor Tim Kaine is proposing early release of about 1,000 inmates. New York Governor David Paterson wants early release for 1,600 inmates, as well as an overhaul of the so-called Rockefeller drug laws that impose lengthy mandatory sentences on many nonviolent drug offenders. Here's an idea. How about you stop arresting so many of those nonviolent drug offenders in the first place? Based on the numbers from the FBI Uniform Crime Report for 2007, California arrested over 289,000 people for drugs, Kentucky arrested over 11,000 people for drugs, Virginia arrested over 32,000 people for drugs, and New York arrested over 61,000 people for drugs. Now, if it's too scary to think about not arresting the users of all illegal drugs, let's narrow it down to just cannabis. The FBI didn't give me state-level breakdowns of cannabis arrests, but nationwide, cannabis accounts for 47% of all drug arrests. For the four states mentioned, that's over 185,000 cannabis arrests, and since about 89% of those are possession-only arrests, that's 165,000 or so law-abiding pot smokers arrested. Not growers, traffickers, or dealers, just tokers. To be fair, most of these 165,000 in these four states don't spend much more than their booking time in a jail, but it still takes time, money, and space to prosecute them, and that begins to add up. If these four states just taxed and regulated cannabis like Jägermeister, combined, they'd raise $1.9 billion every year. That wouldn't completely solve these states' budget crises, but it sure would keep a few more actual criminals behind bars.
Change.gov, open for questions, round two response.
During this second round, we decided to leave the voting open significantly longer, but even with that extra time, we were surprised to see the final totals. Over 103,000 people submitted over 76,000 questions and cast over 4.7 million votes. We can now be confident that the success of the first round was not just about a new trick, but just a hint of the willingness of the public to permanently change the way they interact with their government. There's plenty of room to grow. For this round, we refined the process to make it more user-friendly and broke out the questions into categories. We think this made for a more interesting experience and ensured that a broader array of questions could get exposure. But we also wanted to try a new way of responding to the questions, so this time, instead of text answers, we asked incoming White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs to sit down with us. Since there were so many popular questions in so many categories, we tried to pull out some of them that had been addressed previously by the president-elect or vice-president-elect in order to focus the video portion on questions that haven't been as specifically addressed during the transition. Oh, fantastic! We were also concerned when the number one question in the first round of voting was from a citizen in Denton, Texas, who asked, quote, "Will you consider legalizing marijuana so that the government can regulate it, tax it, put age limits on it, create millions of new jobs, and create a billion-dollar industry right here in the U.S.?" End quote. And you dismissed it with a curt 11-word response.
President-elect Obama is not in favor of the legalization of marijuana.
So this video response must be the chance you were waiting for to explain more fully your opposition to marijuana legalization, right? After all, of the top five questions in the first round, ours was the only one to get a short dismissal with no explanation. This time, legalization placed fourth overall and top in the national security category.
At last, that Obama promise of transparency in government and responsiveness to the public is about to take root. Let's go to the video.
Hi, I'm Robert Gibbs. I'm the incoming White House press secretary. We've just finished our second round of Open for Questions, which allows you to ask the transition any question you want and vote on which questions we should answer. It's part of our goal of making this transition the most open and transparent of any in history. And the response has been really inspiring. Over 100,000 people participated, asking 72,000 questions and casting 4.5 million votes for the questions that you wanted answered most. 5 times the amount of participation we had in the first round. So let's answer some questions. JGP in Seattle asked, what strategies other than bailouts can we employ to keep jobs in America? It's a great question, and the president-elect
has already tasked his economic team with coming up
Okay, these are good questions, but I think I'm just going to skip ahead a little bit and see if we can get to the marijuana question.
Dan in New Jersey asks, I know many teachers that are familiar with the No Child Left Behind Act.
Oh, yeah, No Child Left Behind. We need to get rid of it and get some real education to our kids. But again, what about that marijuana question you didn't answer the first time?
John from Chicago asks, will transit and inner-city rail projects be a major component?
I got a great way to pay for those high-speed rail lines. How about taxing and regulating marijuana?
Dan Fisher from Sacramento asks, how will the Obama administration encourage the future generations of Americans to become the world's leading scientists and engineers? Dan, I heard the president-elect say many times during the campaign that it was time to put science back into our decision-making process.
Hey, now we're getting somewhere. Let's use some science to set our policy on industrial hemp, consumer cannabis, and medical marijuana. That's a great idea. Why don't you tell me more?
And to finally have scientists and engineers involved in policy-making decisions every day in the White House. He'll restore science to our decision-making process, put real scientists in charge of things in the White House, and make sure the decisions aren't based on ideology, but on facts.
You're going to tell me that with a straight face when you're considering Jim Ramstad, a former representative recovering addict for drug czar? How about a scientist in charge of the Office of National Drug Control Policy? How about a medical professional?
Victor in San Diego asks, in all other first world countries, there's a minimum level of universal health care for all citizens. What will your administration do to provide truly universal, affordable health care for all U.S. citizens, regardless of employment status? Victor, the president-elect said many times that he will ensure that every American has access to affordable health care.
Unless you can plant it for free, and then there's still some question about that.
Just in the last week, thousands of people from all over the country during the holidays took...
I still haven't heard why President-elect Obama is opposed to the legalization of marijuana. I think you're down to just enough time for one more question.
Thaddeus from Lansing, Michigan asks, is the new administration going to get rid of the don't ask, don't tell policy? Thaddeus, you don't hear a politician give a one-word answer much, but it's yes. Thanks for everybody that took time out of the holidays to log on, ask questions, and vote for the ones that they wanted to hear answers.
Hold on. Whoa, wait a minute.
But more importantly, the president-elect
didn't you say
every one of us?
Yeah, we are involved. We send in the question. We made it the number one question. How many times do we have to vote? How much more involved can we be?
To push your lawmakers and to push this new administration to do what you know is right. Thanks for participating.
That's interesting. Oh, wait a minute. Here on the website, right below the video, there's this part that says previously addressed questions, and it has some updates on the Patrick Fitzgerald as Bush administration special prosecutor question and the Israel-Gaza question and the taxpayer Wall Street bailout accountability question. Okay, well, it looks like the answers to previously addressed questions will go here. Oh, here's a new one. Quote, will you consider legalizing cannabis, marijuana, hemp, so that the government can regulate it, tax it, put age limits on it, and create millions of new jobs and create a multi-billion dollar industry right here in the U.S., end quote, from DJ C in Chicago, Illinois.
Open for questions response 12-15-08. Quote, President-elect Obama is not in favor of the legalization of marijuana, end quote.
Wow. It's condescending dismissal I can believe in. Nothing like transparent and thoughtful responses to an issue that has now twice placed in the top five among the citizens who are responding online.
Stupid Stoner Stories.
As a public service, Normal reminds you that smoking marijuana will not make one stupid. However, some stupid people do smoke marijuana. Don't be one of those stoners that make the rest of us look bad. Learn your lesson from today's
Stupid Stoner Story.
Tennessee man orders marijuana from cops. From the Knoxville News Sentinel.
In McMinnville, Tennessee, police in May say they arrested a man who misdialed and ordered marijuana from a sheriff's deputy. Investigators said Deputy Jason Rowland answered his cell phone and someone asked if he had any, quote, smoke, end quote. Rowland played along and the caller ordered $40 worth of marijuana. The buyer showed up and police charged him with solicitation of drug sales.
Misdialing your dealer and getting the police isn't stupid, it's unlucky. But calling a cell phone number to order weed in the first place, that's stupid. Every call you make is not only a log of who ordered what from whom and at what time, but also a triangulated position of everyone involved in the call. And cell signals are pretty easy to intercept even without a warrant. Nah, I've changed my mind. It's stupid, period. Even if you are making this ill-advised call, you don't use some sort of code and identify the person you are speaking with first? Bad form.
Hello, Chicago!
Barack Obama has been elected the 44th President of the United States. But will he bring us, the cannabis community,
the change we can believe in?
It's an issue of doctors prescribing medical marijuana. I think that should be appropriate.
Normal is asking you to take action and help us hold President-elect Obama to his word with our $10,000 pro-cannabis law reform ad contest.
When I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Just make a 30 or 60 second video or flash animation that answers the question, what should President Obama do about pot? You can submit as many entries as you like, and winning videos will be featured on Normal's website and television campaigns.
What I'm not going to be doing is using Justice Department resources to try to circumvent state laws on this issue.
The grand prize is $3,500, so enter early and enter often.
Well, I would not punish doctors if it's prescribed. That may require some changes in federal law.
Contest deadline is January 15, 2009. Check norml.org for official contest rules.
The war on drugs has been an utter failure, and I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
President Obama, we couldn't agree more.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws is the largest grassroots drug law reform organization in America. So every Monday we visit with the activists in drug law reform who are fighting for our freedom. Get motivated to get it regulated. Join us in some political activism today. You can start by visiting norml.org. We've been reacting here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash to the top questions at the Barack Obama website, change.gov. As we told you earlier, the number one question was a question regarding the legalization of marijuana, which was dismissed by a curt 11-word reply. Well, we're not the only people that noticed that, and joining me today by telephone is Norm Stamper, and longtime listeners will know Norm, but for those newbies out there, Norm is an advisory board member of Normal and with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Check out his website at normstamper.com, and his book is Breaking Rank, A Top Cop's Exposé of the Dark Side of American Policing. And hello, Norm. Welcome to the Stash.
Hello. It's great to be with you, Russ. Thank you.
Let's also fill our listeners in before we get too much into the Obama question here about your background as a law enforcement officer.
I became a beat cop in the city of San Diego in 1966. It sounds like ancient history now. And served for 28 years in that police department. In 1994, I was recruited by the mayor of the city of Seattle to compete in the police chief's race, and in fact was named by the mayor as his police chief, and I served in that capacity from 1994 to 2000.
Excellent, excellent. So when you're speaking out about this, especially with law enforcement against prohibition, and I love that you've probably seen the T-shirts if you've been to any of the festivals that say, cops say legalize drugs, or ask me. I can't remember the exact phrase, but...
That's exactly it, and then it says, ask me why.
Ask me why, exactly. And so with this question here, you and I both noticed this about Barack Obama's transition team reacting to the legalized marijuana question. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, to put it mildly, I was disappointed. I have been an enthusiastic supporter, and I remain an enthusiastic supporter of our president-elect. And I think the future holds many, many promising things. But when we get an 11-word response to the question, a well-formulated question about the legalization of marijuana that says in response that President-elect Obama opposes the legalization of marijuana. Well, the idea that the population of the United States can interact with its president-elect and ultimately its president in these kinds of forums is just extraordinary. I think it speaks not only to the technology and the capacity of the Internet to encourage and sustain a dialogue between, everyday Americans and our leaders. It's an opportunity to understand why our elected officials take the positions they do, and in this case, why President Obama opposes the legalization of marijuana. And there is no why. It's just he opposes it.
Right. I wasn't so surprised by the essence of the answer, but just by the phrasing of it. I didn't expect Obama to come out and say, well, yeah, let's spark one up, No, I didn't expect that. And I could have even, understood an answer that had a no in it if there was some reason for it. The lack of any sort of discussion of the issue is more offensive than the answer itself.
I agree completely. I mean, one could hope for a really enlightened answer that reinforces the value of completely rethinking our position on marijuana, and from Leap's point of view, other drugs as well. But particularly in this case, where 100 million or more Americans have tried tried marijuana at least once, and anywhere from 25 to 40 million Americans smoke it with some degree of regularity. We know that marijuana is not a gateway drug. We know that it is far less harmful than tobacco and alcohol. And yet, once again, we get this answer that says, no, I just oppose it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, please explain why.
Well, and I wanted to ask you some other questions as well with regard to policing and marijuana. I have a couple of cousins. Well, my cousin and her husband, who are our county sheriff's deputies back in a conservative county back in Idaho, where I'm from. And I talk to them about these things at our family gatherings. And both of them just seem really put out by the whole issue. It's like, I really wish I didn't have to waste my time dealing with a marijuana bust when I have so much more important things to do. Is that a common feeling among active duty police?
It's a very common feeling. I can tell you that in the years, 2-3 years now that my book has been out, I have been talking with police at all levels, from beat cops to chiefs, sheriffs and narcotics officers and others, who really do, in many cases, take exactly that position. Now, I should say there are a number of true believers, drug warriors, who identify. I mean, their identity is wrapped up in drug enforcement. And in some cases, there's just, quote, no talking to them. they have drawn the line in the sand and believe that what they're doing is God's work.
Yeah.
But I would say the majority of police officers across the country now take the position that marijuana ought not to be, the adult possession of marijuana ought not to be a crime. And not just simply decriminalization of marijuana, but rather legalization with regulation. Many of them take an economic point of view and say, you know, we're losing out on a huge sum of money that could be associated with a regulation, namely taxation and the control of the drug as opposed to the prohibition of it.
Yeah, with the states facing the budget deficits they're going to be facing after this Wall Street crisis, that's certainly an attractive avenue of argument. But also, I wanted to point out what may be a paradox, or maybe it's not, maybe it's just the thinking at the top. But with regards to Massachusetts question two, you know, a lot of times from law enforcement, we hear this thing of, well, I just enforce the laws. I don't write them. I just enforce them. And yet when the people of Massachusetts pass this decriminalization measure, it seems like law enforcement is awfully reluctant to want to obey that new law. Or is that just does that filter down from the top? Do the beat level cops, would they be more amenable to this question two kind of thing? And we're just hearing what the top want us to hear?
Well, the top is divided, I think it's safe to say. I've actually been meeting with corrections officials as well as law enforcement officials, and really across the board in the criminal justice system, the top is divided. We've got those who favor drug policy reform and those who oppose it. But I do believe that you've nailed the issue, where the people of a particular state have voiced their view in an initiative, have actually changed state law for that state's law enforcers to ignore that new law, and in some cases to more aggressively pursue enforcement of the previous law, I think is unconscionable.
Yeah.
And that's happening throughout the country, and part of it, I believe, is traceable to the relationship between local jurisdictions and the federal government. As you well know, marijuana is still a Schedule I drug. We still have the DEA raiding medical marijuana dispensaries, for example, in those states whose voters have overwhelmingly approved medical marijuana. And I think that's just it is a shame, of course. But I think we need to understand why these local police officers, whether it's the chief or the sheriff or a beat cop, takes the view that even though the voters have spoken, we're still going to go out there and pop people for the possession of marijuana.
Yeah, it's really amazing. We did a seminar up here in Portland, Oregon here in December, where we heard one of our criminal defense attorneys in Eugene, Oregon, talking about how one of the county sheriffs in one of these more conservative counties in Oregon just said, well, we don't recognize the medical marijuana law. Well, yes, you do. You're county law enforcement. You have to. It's an amazing situation to see this battle, even within law enforcement itself. On another topic here that I thought I'd get your opinion on as well, I interviewed Rusty Fleming, who's the director of a movie called Drug War, Silver or Lead, and it examines the drug war that's happening in Mexico right now and the corruption of law enforcement there, the huge sums of money that these drug cartels can pay off these Mexican officials. And I'm wondering, do you see that filtering its way up into America by way of corruption into law enforcement, or just going to make a situation that's already bad worse?
I do believe that some form of creeping corruption is inevitable as long as this drug war continues to be waged as it has for the last several decades. Unless I was a last-minute cutting room victim, I'm in Rusty's film representing the position of LEAP. And we are convinced that death and disease and crime and addiction are traceable directly to the drugs so much as the drug laws and the war on drugs.
Yeah,
I grew up in San Diego, as I mentioned, and I spent the first 48 years of my life on a border town, and it is heartbreaking to see what's happening from Tijuana to Matamoros. The drug cartels are engaged in a pattern of vicious executions, assassinations. You know, I don't want to get too gruesome here, but they are beheading rival drug dealers. They are lighting a fire, snitches. This notion of silver or lead is pretty explicit. You either cooperate with us, in which case we'll make you a wealthy person, or we will fill you with lead. And some of the assassinations are not all that clean as a gunshot wound, as I mentioned. So it's a horrible, horrible thing to contemplate. Rusty's film originally, by the way, was entitled The Colombianization of Mexico.
Hmm.
For a variety of reasons, he picked another title. I think that was probably smart. but I think we need to recognize that from Pablo Escobar to today's Sinaloa and Nuevo Laredo and Tijuana and other cartels in Mexico, we are seeing the same levels of violence, if not worse, in Mexico that we saw in Colombia.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm Casper Leach, host of Time for Hemp. When our politicians passed the Marijuana Tax Act in 1937, the citizens of the United States had no idea that a new civil war had begun. Now, after more than 7 decades of this war's escalation and spending well over $1 trillion of taxpayers' money, the result has been an arrest record of more than 37 million brothers and sisters for nonviolent drug offenses. Every year, we choose to continue this war. We do so at the cost of well over $69 billion. Add to this, we are building prisons faster than we are building schools. In fact, the prison industry is now one of the fastest growing industries in the United States. We must end this civil war. We can with your help. Please, join LEAP, the law enforcement against prohibition, and become part of the solution to ending the war on drugs. Go to leap.cc and find out how to become a member.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Well, it's been a long and crazy day for me, and I know when I'm just struggling to find some great tune to play here on the Stash, I can always turn to the boys of the Cottonmouth Kings and find something enjoyable to play. This one's actually from one of the Kings, Daddy X, on his solo album, Organic Soul. And it's a great song. This one's called Higher Than High. And I just kind of found it by accident and thought it would be a great song to play. Kind of surprised I hadn't played it already. You, of course, know that Cottonmouth Kings are available at cottonmouthkings.com. And they're on Suburban Noise Records, which you can catch at suburbannoiserecords.com. This is Daddy X with Higher Than High. Standing to make a difference.
solution. You can call it daddy's constitution. So you can spark a joint, spark a moment, spark a whole revolution with these hydroponic solutions for all this universal confusion. So you can spark a joint, spark a moment, spark a whole revolution with this peaceful solution. I wanna get high.
Is someone you know a marijuana smoker? Have you or is someone in your family been arrested for a marijuana violation? You need to know the truth about pot. NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, is the most comprehensive source of information regarding marijuana and its effects on health, as well as legal issues. NORML even offers a database of lawyers specializing in cannabis in your area. NORML, the nation's largest and most successful marijuana law reform organization, has spent decades gathering the knowledge and science on everything related to cannabis. NORML is the best resource to find out the truth about marijuana, connect with a lawyer in your area, or help find an end to prohibition. Information is available at normal.org, that's NORML.org, or toll free at 888-67-NORMAL.
We continue now with the second part of my interview with Norm Stamper, the former police chief of Seattle and advisory board member for NORML and LEAP. And we're starting to see officials now, that El Paso City Council standing up, the Attorney General of Arizona, some of the people in these southern states, even in, within government, starting to look at the legalization of marijuana, at least as something to talk about when they figure that 70% of the proceeds that these Mexican drug cartels are making are from the trafficking of cannabis that could be grown perfectly well here in America.
Sure.
One other topic that I definitely wanted to get an opinion on, and you had mentioned that you'd come up, you know, from back in the day, from the 60s and 70s on the streets. How in the world did you guys ever survive without tasers?
Well, you know, one of the fascinating features of this dialogue over tasers is that they are a direct product of local communities saying we don't want police officers blowing away individuals in situations where non-lethal force is a reasonable alternative. So I was intimately involved in that conversation for many years of my career. Tasers as a non-lethal alternative, by definition, represent a step forward. Tasers used as a tool of punishment and indiscriminately obviously represent, from my point of view, an example of police brutality or excessive force, and worse. And a taser in the hand of somebody that doesn't know how to use it, has not been trained in not only how to use it, but when to use it, is just a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah.
It sort of parallels, in my mind, the proliferation of SWAT units around the country in some of the most tiny law enforcement agencies, rural agencies, who just itch to employ what they've been taught, if in fact they've been taught how to be a SWAT officer. And so they target so-called drug houses, they target grow ops, they involve themselves in these dramas that very often leave the wrong house hit, an innocent person caught in the line of fire. It's a real tragedy, I think, and especially for somebody like myself, and there are many others, of course, who feel the same way, who believe that police have a responsibility to be a part of the community, not apart from it, and to engage those people who historically have been the most oppressed or neglected by their local law enforcement agency. And I speak here of young people and poor people and people of color who overwhelmingly, disproportionately are on the receiving end of these enforcement actions by local law enforcement.
Mm, yeah, you know, and with me, the whole taser argument for me is a matter of, if it's being used as a non-lethal alternative, that's perfect. When it's being used as an instrument of compliance, that's where I start to have, you know, contempt of cop, you know, when they want to try to just, like you said, punish someone. That's definitely something we don't want to see from our police. And these drug laws help to exacerbate these feelings. I think that's one of the things that makes me saddest about the drug war, is how it distances people from their communities, from their policing. I speak to older generations sometimes, and they'll talk about the day they grew up in the neighborhood and they knew their beat cop, and the kids were taught to go to the police and trust them. And do you feel that from this drug war?
Absolutely. I think the relationship between police and community, and particularly, you know, those elements of the community that historically have had a strained relationship with the police, that so much of that strain is traceable directly to the role that we put our police in. They are the frontline warriors in the drug war. They are, by definition, engaged in enforcement practices that are unpopular and in my judgment simply cannot be sustained on the basis of science and evidence and what we know about the drug war. We know that the drug war is far more harmful than the all illicit drugs combined.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we continue to wage it, and we continue to make enemies of the people that the police are hired to serve, and it's a tragedy on a political level and an economic level. The cost of prosecuting this war is now over $1 trillion since Nixon declared war on drugs, but it's also a cost to the definition of law enforcement in a democratic society.
Mm. Well put. I want folks to make sure they check out your website, which is at normstamper.com. If you're interested in law enforcement against prohibition, the website there is leap.cc. And then Norm's book is Breaking Rank, a top cop's expose of the dark side of American policing. I suppose that's available on your website?
It is.
And Amazon by any chance?
It's available online and wherever fine books are sold.
Well put. Have you done radio before?
I have a couple of interviews, sure.
Excellent. And Norm's also an advisory member on the board of, or a member of the advisory board of Normal, so that's fabulous as well. Before we go, do you have any final thoughts about the subject of the drug war or marijuana in particular?
You mentioned, Russ, that it's kind of tedious to hear police officers say, well, I don't make the laws, I just enforce them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And when I hear that, I hear an automaton. I hear somebody who lives in a black and white world. I also hear this. In the end, that statement's correct. The police are not responsible for making laws. It is our responsibility as citizens of this country, and I think it's long since past time that we rise up through initiatives, through pressure on Congress and our president-elect to say enough, that it's time for sane and sensible drug policy. We'll save a whole lot of money. We'll save lives. We'll restore neighborhoods and families. But we've got to do the hard work of organizing, mobilizing, and educating.
Excellent. Well put. Thank you, Norm, for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with some programming reminders. Check the mainstream media for an abnormally large number of programs featuring cannabis. First of all, on Friday, January 16th, the NBC News show Dateline has an hour-long profile of the tragic death of Florida college student Rachel Hoffman. You remember that story? Check it out at stash.normal.org. Use our search feature and just look for Rachel Hoffman. Also, ABC News 2020, John Stossel's investigative unit is going to be looking at the case of medical cannabis provider Charles Lynch. That should also broadcast on Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern. And finally, Business News Network CNBC has a documentary called Marijuana Inc., an hour-long special coming up at 9 p.m. Eastern on January 22nd, which is the next Thursday of next week. So plenty coming up on the mainstream media. And plenty coming up on future editions of the Normal Daily Audio Stash. Thanks for downloading us. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.